Welcome to Season 2 of the Goodness Podcast, the Middle East's first platform dedicated to tackling women's health in a real and honest way. I'm your host, Noor Tahini.
My guest on the podcast today is Mirna Sabbagh, a dietitian and international board-certified lactation consultant. Her work focuses on children's nutrition and on helping mothers navigate this confusing world. She's also a trainer, lecturer, and mom to a 7-year-old son, Kareem. Hi, Mirna. Welcome.
Hi, Noor. Thank you. I'm very good. How are you?
Good. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me and talking about this.
A little bit of background on actually why I asked you to be on the podcast. An old former Goodness team member wrote to me a few months ago, and she had just had a baby. And she wrote to me and she was explaining to me how much she's struggling with breastfeeding. And not just with like the physical act of breastfeeding, but with a lot of the pressure that like she gets from her family, her friends, society in general, the messaging on social media, all around breastfeeding. And she said it would really be helpful if you had someone on the podcast to talk about that. And I was like, okay, like I don't have children of my own. Don't tell my dogs I said that. I have 5 dogs.
Seven, that's a lot.
7 right now. Yeah. We're babysitting too.
That's
well,
so
puppy
cute.
Sitting. Yeah. So, but I don't have human babies of my own. And so I was looking up the right person to have this conversation with. And I came across your account. And you're not only a lactation specialist, but you're also a mom. So you have some firsthand experience in this. And I'm sure you've worked with a lot of moms on that. So that's a little bit of background on how I found you and why I've asked you to be on the podcast. I was thinking of this episode very much for like, soon-to-be first-time moms or like brand-new moms who are struggling to navigate the fourth trimester. That's what it's called,
yeah.
Right? Fourth trimester is?
It's the 3 months after delivery.
Okay.
So there is no fourth trimester, really. But yeah. That's what they call it because they want people to understand that the difficulty of pregnancy doesn't end there. There's the additional 3 months that continue to be as difficult and as demanding. And your baby, you feel like, is still so dependent on you.
Is it just 3 months in reality?
In reality, it's much longer. I actually find the fourth trimester or the first 3 months after delivery to be much, much, much harder than pregnancy, at least for me.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing with delivering and postpartum. I would say no one tells you how hard it is. Since I've had Kareem, I've tried to tell all my friends. I have a social media platform where I talk about this all the time. And I say, guys, ladies, it's hard. Trust me, it's hard, but it's okay. And I feel like I really like give them a good portrayal of what the postpartum experience is. And still, they deliver and they say, no one told me how hard it is because it's so hard. And I think you think that, okay, I'm educated or I'm getting information or I'm strong or I have this resilient personality. I'm sure it's not going to be as hard for me as all these other moms say it is. But in reality, no matter how hard or informed or ready you are, it's a hard period.
Does everyone think it's going to be different for them?
I think everyone does. Yeah. Similar to marriage or, you know, to everything else. You think, and of course, sometimes it's very different for you and you have some control in making it easier, creating the support system around you and creating, maybe finding friends. And we'll talk more about that. So you can make it easier, but you're never going to make it easy. That's just not going to happen. Especially as a first-time mom. Like, you have a child, you have a baby and responsibility that you've never had before in your life. I always say my mom made me feel like it's all rainbows and butterflies. Like, yellow, get a baby, I'll take care of the baby. You know, it was very like, please get a baby. And you realize that she forgot how hard it is to have a baby. And they forget because it's been, what, 30, like, years. And you realize that, no, it's not get a baby and I'll take care of them. You get a baby and the baby's crying for you. Especially if you're breastfeeding, get a baby and that baby wants to feed from you. And you're so confused. You know, you're just, am I doing it right? Is it supposed to hurt this much? Why do I look like this? Oh, my God, what did I do? So you go through a big emotions. And the biggest problem is you don't know who to talk to in this time. And a lot of people don't talk about it because a lot of people think that, yeah, you know, motherhood is hard. And if, even if you tell your mom that it's hard, or not to pick on moms, but if you tell anyone that it's hard. Like, I remember when I was at the hospital and I told the nurse that this is so hard and this is so painful because I was hurt and it was for something I was doing wrong and she didn't know. And she said, no, yeah, no, motherhood is hard. How do you think we raised this entire generation before you? And it's a very shaming space. Like, how dare you talk about this عادة, you know? And it's not عادة, it's hard. It sucks. It's very scary and it's very overwhelming. So you get this shame or this, like, I don't want to nag and I don't want to complain, but just keeping it in is going to isolate you and give you lots of hard emotions that you shouldn't be keeping to yourself.
Yeah, I've heard that from a lot of my friends have children, and I've heard this, that, you know, you feel you're going through something so hard, but you also don't want to seem ungrateful for the fact that you've been blessed with this gift.
Yeah.
And I have heard this like comment back, which we were talking about, which is saying, oh my God, motherhood's so hard, and then receiving the reply, yeah, but you're not the first mom or the last mom. You know, everyone's done it before you and everyone will do it after you.
Yeah.
Or almost everyone, and everyone survived it and you will too.
Yeah. You know, it doesn't work like that. Yeah. You need to hear that this is hard. I promise it's going to get better. In the meantime, how can I help you? How can you help yourself? What can we do? Or just listening, you know, to you. But I remember, for example, for each woman, of course, it's different. But I don't think I was depressed. I don't think I had postpartum depression. I do think I had postpartum blues or, you know, just the normal hormone crash that happens after delivery and the shock and the lack of sleep and the insanity that happens. But I remember that I was so upset that if someone told me congratulations, so, you know, people come over and they want to tell you congrats. And as soon as they tell me congrats, I start crying. So it was embarrassing. My parents were like, what are we going to do with her? It's not normal. So they would come for the happy news and get this like really sad human. But I wasn't sad. I was just really overwhelmed. And at the time, because I was in Lebanon, so my parents told everyone I was in Dubai and they told everyone in Dubai I was in Lebanon so that I just wouldn't see people for a few weeks. And things got better and better. And I remember at the 3 months mark, it wasn't exactly 3 months like, you know, like magic. But I remember at around 3 months, things got so much better. And I always say this and it makes me so emotional. It was the first time I had an emotion to Kareem.
Yeah.
It was the first time I felt love. It was the first time I felt anything. And it was only when things got better and I kind of started to understand what's going on. And that happens to a lot of moms.
Yeah, there's a lot of guilt felt by moms who don't, you're told that you have to instantly, the second you lay eyes on your baby, you're going to fall in love and you're going to realize that you've never experienced a love like this before and your whole world is going to be turned upside down. And what I've heard is like, yes, your world is turned upside down, but a lot of the times you don't feel that love at the beginning. And that's very confusing because you're told you're supposed to, and you're like, is something wrong with me? Am I, the question that I hear all the time, am I a bad mom?
Yeah.
What does it mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And because again, it comes with so much shame and, you know, I feel like shame surrounds women all the time, but I feel like it's more in the Middle East because we have this sacrificing, oh my God, your baby above everything else, your entire goal in life is to be a mom. So you feel like a lot of shame surrounds, especially Middle Eastern women, and you don't want to say these things. And I realized when I said it the first time, because I didn't have a social media platform when I had Kareem. I started it when he was 2 or 3. And once I talked about it, I had so many moms send me messages, oh my God, me too. Oh my God, I felt the same. Mm. And that guilt was eating them up, especially in the beginning when they don't know it's going to go away. So talking and talking honestly is really necessary. Like and I'm not telling you it's going to help because like we said, you end up thinking it's going to be different for me. But what I find is sharing our genuine experiences and also creating group of friends going through the same thing that you're going through. Mm. So when I had Kareem, two of my friends, it was such a coincidence. One of them I knew from university, but I hadn't seen her for a while. I found out she was pregnant, and then her friend was pregnant. So it was this trio, and honestly, that trio made my experience at least 100 times better. Because in the middle of the night when it's 3 a.m. and you're like, what a nightmare, I'm so exhausted, you would check your phone and find that they're awake too. And you know, if one of them delivered a month before you, you're kind of going through the same thing. And you can't go out with your friends in the same way or even deal with your partner in the same way. And a lot of things change and you need people in that space. And there's also now Facebook groups, which can sometimes be helpful and sometimes
not
be unhelpful. But I find that you'll always find at least a few people that make it for you during this phase.
Two of my closest friends had babies this year, 2021, about a month and a half apart, 2 months apart. And so it's been so beautiful to see them together and how they're like, they're very much there for each other in a whole new way as moms. So it turned out to be beautiful that they had their babies at the same time.
I totally agree with you. I'll tell you now that Cookie's 7, I'm not as connected with them as I used to be. They've moved on and had, I think one of them had 2 kids and one of them had 3 kids. And, you know, I'm sure they connect with other moms who are going through what they're going through more. But at that time, it was so valuable. And that's why in every phase in life, if you're trying to get out of depression or alcoholism, not to compare them to each other, but
children,
or running, or exactly, or if you want to get into running or you want to change anything, support groups really do work.
Yeah.
And that's just very well known that going, and I remember I was part of a support group when I had, because I wasn't a lactation consultant until Kareem was 2.
Okay.
And I did it out of the nightmare that I had with breastfeeding and the lack of information and the frustration. And it was very shocking because I was already a dietitian and I had all this information, you know, because we learn it. And I was so ready and I thought I knew everything. And still I realized that I don't even know 20% of what I'm supposed to know. So after 2 years, I was like, okay, I want, you know, I succeeded and I want to help moms succeed so they don't go through what I went through. But at the time, I joined something called they're called the LLL or La Leche League. So they do support groups. They're an international organization and it's free and they're found in most countries. And surprisingly, they're available in Lebanon as well. And you go there and there's someone who guides the conversation, a leader. And that group of 5, 6, 10 women and you saying, I didn't sleep all night, and her saying, oh, me too. Or my baby did this. Oh, me too. That normalizing of this period was such a key to me continuing to breastfeed. And I would not have done it without that support.
How long did you breastfeed for?
So I breastfed for 2 years.
Whoa.
I know. But I'll be very honest. Like, it was because of all the information I had. But even with everything I knew, I remember thinking, if I last to 1 month, it would be a miracle.
Yeah.
And then after that 1 month, I was like, oh, okay, look, I know I did it. You know what? Let me try to push it. Like 3 months. If I last 3 months, it would be good. But I had a lot of helping factors at home. One of them is my husband was very supportive and he really wanted me to breastfeed. And he knew all this information, how excited I was. And, you know, he was well informed. I had help. I was at my parents' house. They even had a helper. So many things were done for me. I wasn't... You know, I had food coming for me. I had, I could sleep. I knew someone I trust could at least keep an eye on Kareem. My sister is a dietitian as well and comes from the same background. So she was doing research with me and helping me and kind of pushing me forward. And I wasn't working. And not only was I not working, I didn't have a deadline to go back to work. And I, in retrospect, I know a lot of women and friends of mine who breastfed with full-time jobs and everything. And I think they're amazing. But I don't know if I would have been able to breastfeed without all the support. So having said that, I see a lot of moms who are not able to breastfeed. And honestly, I get it. I get it. And I don't know if I would have been able to without all the factors that I had, because it really involves a lot of energy and needs a lot from even the people around you.
But anyway, after like the 6 month mark or something, the frequency is not the same, right? You don't have a child attached to you all the time because they're eating other foods as well? Or do I have that wrong?
No, you're right. Okay. So the way it happens is in the beginning, they breastfeed almost on the clock, like every hour and a half. Like, you know, you'll read stuff that say they'll breastfeed every 3 hours. They don't. Most of them breastfeed every hour and a half or 2 hours. And it's a lot. And that goes on for about like a week until the woman gets her established milk supply. Because when the baby's born, you don't have your full milk supply. You have barely anything.
I think this is something that surprises a lot of women. And that's what I've heard from friends who have become moms, is that you have this idea that baby's going to come out and then you're going to put the baby on your boob and milk is just going to gush out.
Yeah.
And that's not the case.
And I would say, Noor, that this is the most important thing I would love moms to know, that the milk is built over effort over the first 6 to 7 days. So when you deliver, your body barely makes 5 milliliters every 2 hours. And that's very normal because the baby's tummy only fits 5 milliliters.
Okay.
It's tiny. It's smaller than a marble. So the way the body is made, and it's amazing, is that it increases the milk supply as the baby's tummy gets bigger. Because if you're giving 200 mLs to a baby who has a 5 milliliter tummy, that child's going to get reflux and, you know, it's going to be a catastrophe. So you build it up. And the way you build it up is the more your baby feeds from you, the more your milk supply increases. So you've got to be breastfeeding 8 to 10 or whatever, as much as the baby wants for the first 3 days. And then you start to see your colostrum, which is this thick fluid, change into this transitional milk, which is more yellow, and then it changes into, which is more white, and then it changes into like a fully adequate milk at day 7. And I wouldn't say adequate because it's adequate all throughout, but this milk that we expect to be seeing. But that's not going to happen unless you do the work. So what happens with moms is they hear this all the time. They hear, give him formula until your milk comes in, which is ridiculous, because your milk is not going to come in if you're giving formula. And then you go into the cycle of, oh, my mom didn't have milk. Oh, my aunt didn't have milk. Oh, my God, I don't have milk. And I just didn't have milk. And it's so common in so many circles, because in some countries, it just comes more naturally than others because it's part of their culture. But in certain countries, like I would say in Lebanon and Jordan, they really have this idea that we don't have enough milk. Mm. And the thing is, there is a lot of shame that comes with it later. So you don't want to say, oh, I didn't know. It takes a very brave person to say that I had the wrong information and now I have the right information. So it just goes on with, I didn't have enough milk, spreading it around. But the research shows us that only 2% of women around the world are not able to make enough milk.
That's what I wanted to ask you, because I have heard this, that someone didn't have enough milk. But what you're saying is that it's actually very unlikely that you didn't have enough milk, and it is more likely that you didn't go through the process of training your body to produce the right amount of milk.
Absolutely.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. This is mind-blowing for me. Maybe all our listeners who are moms are listening to this and they're like, we know.
Yeah. No, not at all. Not at all. And, you know, I like to say that waiting for your milk supply to come in is like waiting for a cab you didn't order. It just doesn't happen like that. Like, you've got to order it. You've got to ask your body. And then your milk supply goes up. So back to your question of, does it change? So in the beginning, you've got this baby breastfeeding for 45 minutes. You know, people say 20 minutes, but every baby is different. But you've got this baby breastfeeding every 45 minutes, every 3 hours, which is such a nightmare because you can't go out, you can't do anything. And then it changes. The baby gets better at feeding, and that's something a lot of moms don't know. So even at 3 months, you might find that your baby is breastfeeding for 5 minutes from each side. And I remember Kareem breastfeeding for exactly 5 minutes from the right and from the left by the time he was 3 months. And I was like, oh my God, my milk supply dried up. There's nothing there. But the boy was so chunky. And he was purely breastfed. And I would go to the doctor and be like, listen, I don't know. He's not breastfeeding. My milk supply. He's like, you have oversupply. You have so much milk. He's growing really fast.
Yeah.
But babies get better. So it's all of these signs that make you not trust yourself. You know, you're like, oh, it's not enough. I need to supplement. Or you're going to think, my breasts, for example, stopped. You know, because when you first start breastfeeding, your breasts get really engorged and they're enormous. But then they stop being engorged because your body gets used to breastfeeding. So they're like how you are normally. So you also think that you don't have enough milk. And you've got all these signs that happen to you, and you have to, it's like detective work. You have to say, no, okay, that's normal. And I still have a good milk supply. And then it continues. So after the 3 months mark, I would say that kids breastfeed every 4 hours for 10 to 20 minutes maximum, and they night wean. So you're only breastfeeding really like 5-6 times a day max. And then it becomes 4 times a day and 3 times a day. And, and you know, by the time he was one, and honestly, like even some people might be listening to this, and I have friends who are not moms who tell me this all the time. No, Mimi, Ken Shab, and he was 1 year old. He was walking and breastfeeding from you. Like, that's so wrong. And I think it's so funny that people think that, you know, because I did experience it. And I stopped breastfeeding in public because, of course, I didn't want to go through the you know, all the drama of it. But he was, I felt like I have something so beneficial, and it has all these antibodies, and it gives so much immunity. It's like this free medication that your body gives that actually has zero side effects. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't do it. Why? Because some people think it's strange.
Yeah, people definitely think it's strange.
Definitely.
Like I've heard this a lot.
And the thing is, which I, because of course when I was doing it, I was like, you know, you get your family members like, stop and khalas, and, you know, you don't need, oh my God. And because culturally we're not used to it.
Did you not consider pumping for like, so that after a certain age you were giving him your milk, but through a bottle?
I did actually have so much milk frozen because, you know, I'm the type to get really paranoid and what if this happens or what if that happens? So I had a lot of milk pumped, and I was able, I remember when he was a year old, I think, I went to Paris for 3 full days and he had more than enough milk. And I used to go out and I used to go partying.
Yeah.
And in case he needed milk, there was milk there. Yeah. And, you know, I lived my life and I had my social life and I went on staycations. And, you know, I had stuff that I used to do that I used this milk for. I didn't necessarily feel like I think that happens with a lot of moms. You'll have all this pumped milk and you won't end up using it. So you'll try to find recipes to use them for. But I do remember I gave him a bunch. And it is a very natural thing after a few months. But you've just got to give it time.
Yeah.
And you'll find that it comes to you and it's really like, honestly, such a beautiful thing to do. Because for me, and the way I looked at it after a while, is if it wasn't for breastfeeding, it would have been really hard for me to communicate with him. Because he cries, you have no idea what to do. But when you're breastfeeding, he cries, you feed him. He's upset, you feed him. You breastfeed him. He bumps his head, I don't know, you breastfeed him. He's sick, your body knows when your baby's sick from their saliva. And it makes the exact antibodies for them. And it continues, and it's like your secret weapon to motherhood.
Yeah.
And then you feel like this is so beautiful and such a great time to hug. And I remember when I weaned him when he was 2, it was weird for me. Like, what do I do when he falls? And what do I do when he... And like, I didn't get it. And I would try to find reasons for him to come hug me and spend time with me because he was just so busy. And they tell you that weaning is harder on moms than it is on kids. And it's absolutely true. And I wanted to tell you one thing about being attached. Everyone was so worried about me. They're like, this boy is never going to nursery. But I had read, but not experienced, that kids who are breastfed or loved or, you know, get all this extra attention, not extra, but they get all this attention from their parents, they actually feel more independent and they are more independent. And I didn't believe it. I was like, no. I was so petrified. And I remember the first day I took him to nursery, and you're supposed to do this 3-day waiting for them and to get accustomed and stuff like that. And all these moms were there. And Kareem, I dropped him off. He went in and didn't look out, didn't look back. No one called me. Mm. He didn't even care. And I didn't even have to go back the second or third day. And I do believe in that. I believe whether you're breastfeeding or not, it doesn't have to do with breastfeeding. But when you give them your love and attention and time, it's not that they become more attached. They actually become more independent. You see that in psychology as well. The kids who get less love and less attention and less of all of that, they are the ones who become more attached and anxious.
Makes sense. That makes sense. When you were talking earlier about like moms worrying about whether they have enough milk supply or not, et cetera, and you thinking that because your boobs got smaller, that meant that they were running out of milk supply. And I've heard from friends that pumping helped them with that because...
Yes.
When you pump and you can actually see the milk come out and you can actually measure, okay, I got 100 milliliters out of this time. And my baby drank 100 milliliters or 90. Okay, so my baby is drinking 90 now. Whereas when you put your baby on your breast and they just drink and then they stop drinking, you're like, maybe they drank 10, maybe they drank 100, maybe they drank 200. And some people believe that your baby just knows how much they want. And if they didn't have enough, they're just going to cry sooner for it. So either way, it'll regulate. But I do see around me that it provides women with a lot of comfort to be able to, and we love numbers, we love measuring, yes, we love being able to keep track of things. And this whole idea of just like, what'll happen happens. And also you don't want your kid to drink less than they need and then like wake up a few hours later crying in the middle of the night.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. We do love numbers. And I come from a background that is very scientific, and I am one of those extra careful people. So breastfeeding in a way forces you to depend more on understanding your baby, but I couldn't do it without measurements. So the way, and I'll tell you what the issue is with pumping, just for you to comfort your mind in a bit. But for me, scientifically, just so anyone who's listening can get some numbers, you're supposed to find, because every baby loses weight in the first 3 days, and they just have weight from usually from the IVs and water retention and everything like that. So every baby loses weight in the first 3 days, but they're not supposed to lose more than 7% of their weight. So usually the doctors track that for you. And most lose around 5, 6, 7%. But then afterwards, they're supposed to regain their birth weight on day 14. So you're supposed to take them to a doctor on day 14 and check their weight. Like, for example, my doctor didn't have that idea in his mind, like, why come on day 14? But I made sure that we went and we got a weight check. And if he regains the weight by day 14, you know that definitely you have established your milk supply. And then you want to see that a baby is gaining 600 to 900 grams a month after that 14th day. And if you see that, then you know that your milk is enough. Other than that, there is no accurate measure. And the reason is some women are better pumpers than others. So I breastfed for 2 years and I had a very chunky, chubby baby, but I wasn't a good pumper. So whenever I would pump, I would get maybe 80 or 90. So, which is not bad, but also if I thought that's all I made, it would make me panic. Like, that's not enough. You know, he's supposed to be having 120. So pumping does help a lot of moms, but I think the base should be weight gain. Mm. And looking at that, the signs, like he's satisfied or, you know, happy baby, satisfied baby, and that's it. And if you want to pump, that's totally fine. Just know that some people are just not that great at pumping.
That's really interesting. Mm. And one of my friend's babies recently went through a few days where he was drinking less than normal. And she freaked out because, like, let's say he's having 120 in his bottle and then all of a sudden he was only drinking 90. Is that normal? Are there dips in appetite sometimes? Or
absolutely. So there are dips in appetite. If they're having less than usual, you've got to see, are they eating solids or are they not? Or they're just breastfeeding. So you're going to find that they do have these dips. Sometimes they're getting sick. Sometimes they're teething. Mm. Sometimes they're too busy. They go through this phase where they don't feel like eating because they're too busy exploring. So they go through all types of phases. But in general, babies know how much to have unless they're sick. So you've got cases when kids are sick and you've got to like force them to drink so they don't dehydrate and stuff like that. But in general, they really, really know what they're doing. And you have to think about breastfeeding. It's not a modern day thing. This has been going on for millions and I don't know. Is it millions or billions? I have no idea. But this has been going on forever. And it's the most, it's you know, I think we overanalyze breastfeeding, but we don't overanalyze pregnancy. Like in pregnancy, you're like, okay, the baby's gaining weight. Fine, you know, I'm going to deliver. But when it comes down to breastfeeding, which is equally your body doing what it's supposed to be doing, we just hammer it.
Yeah.
And I think we hammer it so much because we see that there is an alternative and we see a lot of social pressure. So you feel like, okay, but maybe it's better to be safer and give the alternative. And not to be, you know, like annoying, but breastfeeding really does such a huge difference on the baby's health. And we have to understand that even though formula is an alternative and it is a great alternative and thank God for it and it saved so many lives and it's amazing, breastfeeding is the base foundation for the baby, because with formula, they've been trying every, and they continue to make it better and better and better. And I hope one day it's equal to what breastfeeding is. And that's my true and genuine wish. But right now, it's very far off in terms of immunity boosting and in terms of what it does for the gut bacteria and in terms of the things that it does for the body later on and the gene expression, stuff like that. So if you can, it does save you a lot of trouble. It decreases ear infections, it decreases hospital stays and all this stuff. But if you can't, and that's a very valid thing, and formula is amazing, there's so much you can do to improve a child's health past the breastfeeding. Past the 6 months mark, which is good nutrition and love and all of these things that can really, really impact a child's health.
Yeah, because we've been talking for, I don't know, maybe a half hour or something about specifically breastfeeding. And I've come away from this conversation now thinking, you know, breastfeeding is amazing and it's good. It's great for the baby and it's good for the mom. And everyone tells you, like, you know, when you breastfeed, you lose the baby weight and like you feel bonded with your child. And there's all these amazing reasons to breastfeed. But then if I were not able to breastfeed my child and I wanted to, I would feel horrendous about myself. And I think that this is one of the really difficult things that women go through after their pregnancy. And this is what my friend was messaging about, my ex-colleague. And she actually sent me, there's an influencer in Dubai, I can't remember what her name was. She posted recently saying, you know, people will see you breastfeeding, or will see you giving your baby formula, and they will just assume that you're doing that because you wanted to get back to your life, or you wanted to get back to the gym, or you wanted to get back to traveling or drinking or whatever. But they don't stop and think that maybe it's killing you inside that you can't breastfeed your baby. And you actually, it wasn't a choice, you know?
Absolutely.
And so I think I can imagine that being very, very difficult, especially with this, like, I don't want to say we glorify breastfeeding because it is glorious. Mm-hmm. It is so glorious. But it's, you know, it's like, it's breastfeeding is like the top thing you want to accomplish. Yeah. And if you can't, then you've fallen short as a mom.
I love that you say that, and I feel very, very, very passionate about this particular topic, because you've got, and I come, of course, from a lactation background, and, you know, I have a degree in lactation, and I'm part of lactation communities, but I've found myself pulling away from a lot of communities. Not that some of them are not amazing, they are, but I think that the messaging needs to change in terms, or what we need, what we say to moms need to change. And I think these, the moms who cannot breastfeed suffer so much by themselves a lot of times. And sometimes it comes out with grief, actual grief. Like grief, sometimes you're in denial and then you become angry and you might type a bunch of crazy stuff online or, you know, you might shame someone or, you know, you go through this process and then eventually you get over it. And sometimes you start to have a rational way of looking at it and sometimes you don't. And both are very valid. But I think we need to change the way we talk about it. And I think there are a lot of groups that are very, I don't know, righteous when it comes down to breastfeeding. And even though I talk about breastfeeding all the time, and I'll tell you this honestly, and sometimes when I do, I regret it. Like, why did I talk about breastfeeding? Because you've got all these moms attacking me like, oh my God, you're making us feel guilty. And I feel like I'm just saying the facts and I'm saying the truth. And that will never mean that you're not an amazing mom. And I think that's what we need to focus on, is every mom, in my opinion, including myself, will fall short somewhere. There is no way on earth you're going to be
super mom.
It's just not going to happen. It's impossible. No matter what, it's impossible. Some things gotta give. You might breastfeed. Like I know moms who breastfed exclusively and didn't feed well or didn't focus on nutrition or completely neglected their kids and didn't care, you know, because they thought, well, that's all I need to do. Or they were very traumatizing to their children. Who's to say that's a better mom than this mom?
So true.
Who's to say? And honestly, with everything I have learned and read and discovered about child nutrition for my own sake as a mother and for others, I realized that the number one thing that you can do for a child's ultimate brain growth and immunity and and just development is to love them and hug them and hold them. And you've got these moms, Noor, and it's upsetting. And you've got these moms who breastfeeding puts such a pressure on them that they cannot love properly and they cannot feel a connection with their kids. And of course, in that case, it helps to talk it out and to get help if you can. But if you absolutely can't, and breastfeeding is just not for you and it's making you this intense person.
Some women hate it.
And some women hate it. Should you breastfeed in that case? And what? Be tense all the time and make your baby feel it in the most important time in their life when they sense all of these vibrations? And I think there's a lot that goes into that. But I do believe that there should be an understanding also from both sides. There should be an understanding that if someone shares a fact about breastfeeding, it does not mean that anything about you. Those are just the facts about breastfeeding, you know, just like any fact about nutrition. It's not about you. And also these moms who I send so much love to know that we will fall short. If it's not breastfeeding, it's something else. I've fallen short at least in several places and in several incidences. And I've learned to say that people tell me you're a great mom. I'm not a great mom. I'm just a mom. Please don't put that pressure on me.
Doing the best I can.
I'm just, and that's it.
Yeah.
And I've done some things that I've known are not the best for Kareem. And that was the only choice that I could possibly take in that scenario that I thought was the best for the family in the long term. And I will not let anyone shame me.
Yeah.
And that's my decision and something that I decided to do. Yeah. So it's important for us not to shame ourselves and for us not to allow anyone to shame us as well.
Yeah, I love that you said that it's not because you breastfeed that you know you're not falling short in other areas, and it's not because you aren't breastfeeding that you're not. Yeah, that's beautiful.
And just one more thing, Noor, on that topic. You breastfeed for 3 months, maybe 6 months, maybe 2 years. That's perfectly fine. But you have a child forever, you know. You're gonna be doing so much work, and that's something moms forget because they feel like I started. It's like starting off the new year with something not amazing, you know. Like I lost the Scrabble the first day of my birthday. I'm like, that's gonna be a crap year. But it's just not like that. There is so much that goes into parenting that has nothing to do with zero. Zero has to do with breastfeeding. Like I look at Kareem now and the number of decisions I have to make, like play dates, activities, food, all of these things. How is he feeling with his friends? How is he feeling with his parents? How is he feeling at home? How is he feeling that? And you know, there's so much that goes into raising a child. And honestly, I don't even think about breastfeeding if it wasn't my job. So I think it's important to keep that kind of attitude that I didn't breastfeed, that's cool. I'll just do the next right thing that I can possibly do.
So what is it that could stop a mom from breastfeeding? So let's say you are a soon-to-be new mom and you're listening to this podcast and you think everyone breastfeeds or you have an expectation that you're going to breastfeed. What are things that, in your experience, have made it not possible for moms to breastfeed? You said there's 2% who don't have enough milk. Some women just don't like it.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And there are several reasons. So medically, there is that 2% of moms. And usually these moms either have hormonal problems. Sometimes they had IVF before or et cetera. Sometimes they have thyroid problems. Many of them have diabetes, even though there's research that shows you that even diabetic mothers can breastfeed. But many times it's hormonal problems that prevent the mom from making enough milk. And that is rare. But there's 1,000 other ones, in my opinion. So you've got the medical system. So I knew all the information I wanted to know about breastfeeding. And when I delivered, everyone told me something. Every medical person gave me the wrong advice. And I only found out later. And even the way they put the baby to breastfeed is wrong. And it creates this horrible latch that causes so much pain. And it's not normal pain.
Is it supposed to be a little bit painful?
Not at all.
Because everyone I know says breastfeeding is so painful and oh my God, my nipples are raw and I have to put this cream and I have to put this patch and I have to...
And that's exactly what happened with me. But I realized it's because I was doing it wrong because the way that... First off, we don't see breastfeeding very often. So I was the first granddaughter. I didn't ever see anyone breastfeeding. My friends didn't breastfeed. So I've never seen anyone in real life breastfeed. Mm. So I don't even know what it looks like. You can look at YouTube videos, but it's very different, especially because you see people like Europeans or Americans, which have very different bodies and figures and stuff. So when the midwife, or I forgot, maybe I wish it was a nurse, put my baby to breastfeed, she put him on in this completely wrong way. And I know we don't have a video now, but...
We do. But describe it to people who aren't listening, who aren't watching.
So, and I actually have some content about it online, and you can look at it online. But what they do is they squeeze your nipple and they like shove it in the baby's mouth, which I only learned later is the way to get cracked nipples. So the baby starts to breastfeed in this very abnormal way, and you start to scar. And that's what happened with me. I scarred, I bled, became black, it peeled.
Oh, Lord.
And I had a C-section, and I swear to you, that nipple pain, because there's so much nerves there, wasn't 10 times, it was 100 times worse. And I really didn't know why. And I kept breastfeeding and all wrong and crying. And I remember whenever he wanted to feed, my body would tense and I would hate it. Literally hate it. Like hate having to feed. And one day my dad's like a Dayaa guy. Okay. So he's a village guy. So he's had a lot of his sisters breastfeed, and he's seen his neck. He kept telling me, Baba, you're doing it all wrong. That's not the position. What you're doing is wrong. And I'm like, no, what do you know? You know, like I'm doing it right. And then I realized that he was right. I was having him in a really horizontal way.
Yeah.
I had his head in the wrong way. I was too like sitting up straight. Turns out I got it all wrong. I needed to be more laid back. I should not force my nipple into his mouth. I should have him open his mouth comfortably, and he should guide the way. I shouldn't, because babies instinctively know how to breastfeed, whereas moms don't instinctively know how to carry them.
I saw a video online. I can't remember why I was looking at this. I think it was something the projects we were doing for Goodness like 2 years ago. But the video showed that you're actually supposed to kind of put the baby vertically, like almost like along your own body and slightly angled, as opposed to this. If I cradle my arms and I imagine this is where the baby should be, but that's wrong, right?
Yeah.
Or it's not ideal.
So there is a cradle position, but we've got to do some changes. Like you really have to be more backward. What we do usually is we're forcing our milk down on them, and they're stuck in our arms and they can't move their heads, which is, imagine you're drinking water in this like laid back force on you.
Yeah.
Like it's ridiculous. And there's so much wrong that we do with the position. We have the baby flat up, turned with their face turned toward us, which also doesn't make sense. It's like drinking sideways, which you never do. So we do so much wrong with that. And in fact, the more natural way, which I hope we can do more and more in the Middle East, and I know some doctors do it in the Middle East, but not many, is as soon as you deliver the baby, you put him on your... But I didn't do it because I had a C-section. I was so sad that I couldn't do it. And that's another discussion when it comes down to...
The C-section.
And the guilt.
Yes. Yeah. Whether natural birth is better.
And oh my God, I couldn't get rid... It took me like a year to get over it.
Wow.
So you're supposed to have them on your tummy, and they're supposed to just kind of crawl a little bit, and then they latch, and they latch perfectly, and you don't have pain. And there's so much videos about it, but we don't do that. That's not how we do it.
Yeah.
And that causes the pain, and that's why, and there are, and I want to say that if you can look for a lactation consultant, and hopefully a good one, and I know there's a lot of great ones in every single country, and have her help you with the latch versus the doctor or a midwife or a nurse that does not have experience, it can make it or break it for you. Because the pain from delivery added on top of it, all the baby crying, the pressure, everything that you're feeling with the nipple pain, that's hard. And that will make you give up. So the pain that happens in the beginning due to the wrong latch, there is something, not to get too technical, but just so people know that sometimes babies have something called a tongue tie and they have difficulty latching, and they can cause the mom pain. So that's something that moms should look at. And then I think the bigger thing that happens with mom is not trusting themselves and not being able to handle the pressure of, am I doing it right? And just feeling like, okay, with formula, at least I can guarantee the amount. 3, lack of support. So if you're sitting, Nuriani, you have to imagine it. You're leaking. You can barely go out. You're frustrated. You're breastfeeding on the clock. And someone comes and tells you like, you know, like just give him formula or do this or do that. And no need to be doing this. All of these things will put a lot of pressure on you. Mm-hmm. And you're going to feel like, why am I doing it? Especially if it's your partner or your mom or someone really close to you. So you might give in here and there, and that can really impact your success. And definitely going back to work.
Going back to work is a big one.
We don't have enough support. Mm. We really don't. So there's really, I would say that there is a lot of reasons. But I like to think that if you really want to breastfeed, you have to know that it's 10% about your milk supply, and it's 90% like your mindset and your absolute perseverance. Like, you've got to be in this, I'm going to do it, and if something goes wrong, I'm going to figure it out and
get the right help. Yeah. When you were saying going back to work, you reminded me of a conversation I had literally last week with a girl who works in Dubai, who lives in Dubai but works at a startup in the US, but kind of virtually. And she was telling me one of her American colleagues blocked out her pumping slots in her calendar. And she, because it's like a shared team calendar so that no one puts meetings at that time. And she has written in all caps, "Please respect this important time. I am literally feeding my child." And like, she's put it in all caps. And I mean, Americans are obviously like America is a whole other planet. But I hope we get to this place where it's like just so normalized and respected.
Absolutely. And Noor, there's something that, and I don't know again if it's cultural, but when you do things right, or when you put that extra effort with, like, first off, you can never get it right in our culture, in my opinion. Like, if you don't breastfeed, you get a bunch of, oh, but breastfeeding is great. But if you do breastfeed, you get, oh my God, you're overdoing it. Zaytia. If you give healthy food, it's like, oh my God, I feel bad for your child. If you give unhealthy food, you say, oh my God, it's not good for them. So there's just this absolute space that you can't get it right. You can't win. You just can't. So I feel like with breastfeeding, it's one of those things. And with the whole conversation with breast is best and et cetera, and you know, you've got these like, or fed is best, and you've got these two sides, and you feel like, trust me, because I've been there. Breastfeeding moms seriously need a lot of support. And you know, people might think that they get more than enough support, but they don't. Medically, they don't get enough support from their families. They don't get enough support at work. They don't get enough support. Does that mean that women who didn't breastfeed shouldn't get equal support? They absolutely need it. And that's where I think the conversation needs to change, you know. And to go back to what we were saying, just a final point about that is, when you know a mom didn't breastfeed, it is not your place to ask her why. It is not your place to ask her, to give her advice. And I hate this, like, and I, you know, it's weird because I'm an expert, and I'll meet someone who didn't breastfeed 2 years ago, and I won't ask them why, because what's my follow-up? Oh, but you know, maybe you should have done that. Mm. How am I going to make her feel? Like, if she didn't particularly come to me to a consultation to tell me I want help with my next child, like, I'm not going to do it. She might hear me talking about it like a podcast today. But if someone I meet socially, I'm not going to have this conversation. Yeah. And yes, it's important to create awareness, but in the place where it's needed. You coming to a mom who didn't breastfeed a month ago and giving her advice about how your breastfeeding journey was so wonderful, and especially around partners and families, that's just, I find it as bad manners, you know, like,
that's
we should know better. And I feel like what we should be focusing on is, I know this can be hard. If you want to talk about it, I'm here. I know this can be hard. I don't know. Do you consider relactating? Because that's a thing that happens with moms.
What's relactating?
Relactating is, let's say a mom was able to have a good milk supply, but she didn't have the right information. Okay. Let me take it back a step. So relactating is basically, let's say you stop breastfeeding for 3 months, you can actually bring your milk supply back.
What's your period?
It doesn't matter. As long as you had milk supply to begin with, you can bring it back. It's not a week. It might take a month.
Yeah.
But you can bring it back. You can bring back a little bit. You can bring back a lot. And the way it happens is by demanding from the body all over again, as if you had a baby. So you start with pumping, three times a day, four times a day, five times a day. You might get five drops the first time, and every day you do it, you're going to find that this five drops becomes, because you're tricking your body to think you have a baby all over again.
But you don't have the hormones.
You do, because what happens is what you need the hormones for in the beginning is to create your milk ducts, and not create them because they're there, but to go into, you know, they call it lactogenesis one, and then there's two, for your ducts to mature enough to be able to create a full milk supply. And you have that. So a lot of women might stop breastfeeding after a month, and you can absolutely relactate. And nor there are people who created lactation who were never pregnant. They were just foster moms or they adopted babies. And there's a whole world of how you can actually stimulate your milk supply. And sometimes it's complicated, sometimes it's not. Now, is this possible for someone who has a hormone problem and cannot breastfeed to begin with? That, I mean, you know,
the 2% you're talking about.
That's right, you're probably not going to be able to create a milk supply. But if you didn't, and maybe you stopped because you had this situation, or maybe you didn't know, or you had a death in the family, or you were stressed, or you were depressed, or whatever reason, and you want to go back, and I'll tell you, there's a lot of women, a lot, who have gone back to breastfeeding. So maybe that's a question. Or maybe, like, I don't know, like, try to be helpful. You can say, I'm ready when you want to talk about it, because she might really want to talk about it, but it's not your place to say why or give advice.
To ask, yeah. One more question for you. And this is one of my friends who's had a baby who asked me to ask you this question. But she's trying to move her baby to formula now, which is a whole other, right? Like the transition from breast milk to formula is a whole other Olympic by itself. But she was asking, is there a point where if you wait too long, your baby is too used to the taste of your milk and it's hard to move them onto formula? Is that a thing?
So I would say no. And I would say that it is also a cultural thing, this fear-based, he's never going to go for formula, or you're never going to be able to go to work. But there are no cases on this planet where a mom or a baby starved himself when the mom went back to work. It just doesn't happen. Eventually, he might give you a hard time for one feed or two feeds or three feeds or maybe a day or two, but eventually they get used to it. And there are some tricks that can be used, and every baby is very different, but you will find that some babies will not take bottles. They prefer to take cups. So if the baby's 6 months old, you might want to put the formula in a cup and try to do it like that, because the bottle, you know, gives them another sucking reflex and they don't want to suckle on something that's not the mom. It can really help when someone other than the mom gives formula, because when the mom gives formula, the baby feels like, but you're right here. Why would I take your formula? I want your milk.
But they can tell that it's different.
Yes, it tastes very different.
Even if they were having the breast milk from the bottle and the formula from the bottle, they can tell it's not the same thing.
Yeah, they can.
Can you mix them together for a little bit?
You can. But you have to be careful in the mixing, just because, you know, just do the formula first according to the measurements. And when that's done, you can add it to the breast milk. Okay. You don't want to mess up electrolytes and water measurements and stuff like this. But you can mix them. You can do 75% formula and 25% breast milk, or the other way around and decrease it as you go. Definitely another caregiver giving the milk definitely works so much. Trying to hold the baby in a way similar to breastfeeding also works. Walking with them, holding them up, being close with them. Mm-hmm. So don't just put them on a mat and just give them the bottle. Look at them at the same time, play with their hair, engage them. So there are a few tricks, and just the panic sets in, and there's a lot of panic that comes with motherhood. Am I ever going to be able to go back to work? And you've got these moms introducing formula from so early on, or bottles from so early on, that it can actually impact breastfeeding. But if you want to go back to work, I would say a good time to start getting ready would be 6 weeks before.
6 weeks before I start to get him used to or her.
And it starts with a small amount. Then you can go up to one bottle, which replaces one breastfeeding session, and then another bottle, which replaces another breastfeeding session, until it decreases as much as you'd like. But I also want to say that a lot of moms go back to work. It takes planning and honestly a lot of effort, but you can go back to work and exclusively breastfeed. And that's something a lot of moms do.
Through pumping?
Through pumping, absolutely. Mm. For example, by the time Kareem was 6 months, I already had so much pump milk. So it was very, I didn't go back to work. But moms who do pump over time, and a lot of moms do a lot. Like I remember I started pumping when he was 6 weeks old, pumping one bottle a day. So by the time he was 6 months old, I had so much milk for him.
Did you have a whole other freezer?
The full house freezer was for him. And so when you're at work, you get that bottle that was already pumped from the day before or that you have saved. And at work, you pump that bottle and you save it and you take it home with you and it just becomes the bottle for the next day. Yeah. That's if you're able to pump. And for some moms, they're so good at pumping, so good, that they don't even need to pump at work. They can pump in the morning, for example, to make an extra bottle. So, and for some moms, they don't even need to maybe they want to give solids during those hours and exclusively breastfeed the other hours when they're home. There's a lot of options and it's not a right or wrong. And the only thing I would say is it doesn't have to be this or that. It can be a combination. You don't have to completely stop. But there is like when Kareem was 6 months old, I really wanted to stop.
Yeah.
And my husband at the time, he said, what do you need? Like, why do you want to, what do you need that would make you continue? And I realized I just wanted to have a life.
Yeah.
I wanted to go out. I wanted to have a social life. I wanted to, you know, start working on myself more because I wasn't working at the time and, you know, start looking for, and I just wanted that. I wasn't frustrated with the breastfeeding. I was just frustrated with the idea of me not doing anything. So at the time, he supported me more. He's like, okay, you know, well, I'll be more hands-on. I'll spend more time with him. You start to have more of your going out and whatever you need to do during the day. And all I needed him was to say that. And then I just started to go out more and I realized I'm re-energized and I could continue. And then at 9 months, I wanted to stop. And I kept wanting to stop, which is very normal. And every time I would think, what is it? Why do I really want to stop? Is it the breastfeeding or is it something else?
Yeah, that's cool. That's really cool. I guess one last question, actually. What are some quick tips you could share with new moms? The one I've heard a few times is pump before you go to sleep if you're pumping so that you don't wake up in the middle of the night with your boobs like super swollen and painful.
Well, that's a really good point because I wouldn't say pump until the baby's 6 weeks old. To be honest, because that's going to mess up everything. And also, just since we got into so much technicalities today, if you are going to pump, that's what I'm going to say, try to be consistent. So if you decide to pump, try to pump every day at the same time that session. Because if you don't, your body is going to be like, okay, so now I'm used to one additional session and she didn't pump it out the next day. So you end up with this excess amount of milk, which is a nightmare for you and you're going to be confused. And not only are you going to be confused, but it can add up and cause mastitis and infections stuff that do happen. So, but what I would say for new moms is my best advice would be lower your expectations for the first 6 weeks. Honestly, I wish someone told me that don't expect anything to be back to normal in the first 6 weeks. Download series, save them. Plan to be on a couch. That would be it for me. For 6 weeks. Just plan to have your friends come over, make it a comfortable environment, make your room epic. I don't know, like, what makes you happy? Like, I'm a serious person, so I can easily sit and watch series and feed and, you know, be surrounded by family members. Don't go with the I don't want anyone here because you do need the help, but you have to create some boundaries. And that's it. Like, that would be my best thing and see how it goes. Because when I was like, I wanted to fit back in my jeans, I wanted to prove to the world that I'm still ready and I'm still the same. And oh my God, I'm not going to let motherhood change me. And this whole thing. And honestly, now that he's seven, I have much more fun than I did even before I had Kareem. And I have my hobbies and my interests and I do everything that I want. But not in the beginning. In the beginning, putting that pressure on yourself,
it's not going to help.
It's not. It's going to really bother you.
Mirna, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
I didn't think I would be this interested in breastfeeding. Would you know? I hope our sound engineer, Kareem, enjoyed this conversation as well.
Noor, thank you so much for your awesome questions. And I really appreciate you talking about this, especially that you're not a mom. I think it's going to spread awareness. And I think that's the kind of knowledge we need is getting educated before we even get pregnant and before we have kids and having this even in our schools and normalizing it.
Yeah, hopefully. Hopefully, yeah. A lot needs to change, but let's start having the conversations. Thank you so much for your time.
You're very welcome.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please like, review, and share it. And I'll see you next week.